We are in the Mond Dome. It was built in 1932 by James Lockyer, youngest son of Sir Norman. Sir Robert Mond stumped up the cash for the project, which is why the dome bears his name. Originally, it housed a four-tube photographic telescope designed to photograph star fields. When the East Devon District Council took over the observatory in 1988, they found that the telescope had been seriously vandalised. The lenses had been stolen and the mounting damaged. The job of reconstruction was undertaken by astronomers in Lancashire, where the rebuilt telescope now resides. Subsequently, the Mond Dome was fitted out as a planetarium, designed to seat 24 if they were friends. It operated from 1988 to 1995, when the present planetarium was built. The dome was renovated, and in it was installed the Lockyer telescope, an instrument that was to start serious solar research and set Lockyer on the path to fame and fortune. He started out as a clerk at the War Office, whose hobby was astronomy. He was one of those people who never did anything by halves. Soon he had purchased a 3¼-inch telescope. He had the ability to draw what he could see through his telescope, and in 1862 he was loaned a 6¼-inch lens, which is the object glass of this telescope. Originally, Lockyer mounted the lens in a papier-mâché tube. This may seem somewhat strange to us, remembering the floppy bowls that one made from wallpaper paste and newspaper, but papier-mâché was the Victorians' fibreglass. In Dundee, there's a telescope dome made from papier-mâché, which is some 100 years old, a bit fluffy around the edges, but still going strong. Lockyer used his fairly simple telescope to make a detailed study of the sun. He fitted it with a small spectroscope which split sunlight into the colours of the rainbow. In this way he was able to show that sunspots were cool areas of the sun's surface, some 1,000 degrees below the average of 5,000 degrees. Up until then, no one knew what a sunspot was. Some thought it was a hole in the sun's surface, and if one looked closely enough you could see what was going on inside. Others thought that they were large objects floating on the sun's surface. Because of his work, Lockyer received a grant from the Royal Society, and with it he purchased a more powerful spectroscope. In October 1868 he was able to show that the sun was made of hydrogen. A French astronomer, Janssens, had made the same discovery in August of that year. As luck would have it, the two astronomers announced their discovery at the same meeting of the French Academy of Sciences, who struck a gold medal in their honour, bearing both Janssens and Lockyer's image. He went on to identify other elements in the sun's atmosphere, sodium, oxygen and the like. He saw evidence of a strange unknown element, which he called helium, after the Greek Helios, the sun. This was 27 years before helium was discovered in terrestrial minerals by Ramsay. Through his astronomy, Lockyer met the publisher Frank Macmillan, and they produced the journal Nature. Lockyer was the founding editor, a post that he held for 50 years, establishing Nature as a leading international scientific journal. Through his contact with the scientists of his day, he became secretary of a royal commission. Among its recommendations was the establishment of the Royal College of Science, where Lockyer was appointed lecturer in astrophysics and later professor, the first in this country. This he managed to do without a single scientific qualification to bless himself with. The Royal College of Science eventually became Imperial College of Science and Technology. It also recommended the setting up of the Solar Physics Observatory, and Lockyer was to be its director. The idea behind the Solar Physics Observatory was to further Lockyer's work linking solar activity to worldwide weather patterns. In this, he was the first to look at world weather, obtaining data from India, Australia, South Africa, and America, as well as Europe. Lockyer reckoned that when there were many sunspots and the sun was active, then there would be more cyclones in the Indian Ocean. In 1871, this telescope was provided with a proper tube and mounting by Thomas Cook, and formed part of an observatory that Lockyer set up in South Kensington, anticipating the formation of the Solar Physics Observatory. It didn't stay there for long. When the Solar Physics Observatory came into being with its more powerful telescopes, Lockyer moved his telescope to an observatory that he had built at Westgate-on-Sea in Kent. This also housed a large 30-inch reflecting telescope whose mirror is displayed in the entrance hall. As a matter of interest, this mirror was used to show that the Orion Nebula was made of hydrogen. In 1909, the decision was made to move the Solar Physics Observatory to Cambridge. There was no place for Sir Norman Lockyer, who was forced into early retirement at the age of 76. The Lockyer retirement home, called Brownlands, still exists today and was built on the side of Salcombe Hill, and his faithful 6 1/4-inch telescope was installed in a dome at one end. During the Second World War, for some unknown reason, the telescope was buried in a wooden box. At the end of hostilities, it was unearthed, only to find that the box had rotted away and the telescope was full of mud. It was cleaned and set off on its journey once more, this time to Heale School in Exeter. Their dome was quite small, and the telescope was mounted on a concrete plinth, moulded, so the story goes, in a coffin. With changes in education, the school had no further use for the telescope, and it was loaned to the Exeter Astronomical Society, who mounted it in a dome halfway between Exeter and Sidmouth. All went well until a farmer built a barn in front of the dome, completely spoiling its view. It was on the move again, this time to a garden shed with a roll-off roof in Exeter. The owner of the shed moved house, and the telescope was dismantled and stored from where we recovered it and brought it back to Sidmouth to be installed in the Mond Dome. You would think that a 147-year-old lens mounted in a 138-year-old mounting would be past its prime. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, it is in constant use, being the telescope of choice for observation of the moon and planets. It can be fitted with a screen on which an image of the sun can be cast, allowing one to count sunspots. It can also set light to bits of paper to demonstrate to schoolchildren the danger of looking at the sun through any optical instrument. It recalls Lockyer's fascination with sunspots, those magnetic storms on the sun's surface which come and go on an 11-year cycle. The beginning of the cycle, there are very few, if any, sunspots. Then small spots appear halfway between the sun's equator and its pole. Gradually, the number of sunspots increases, as does their size, as they move towards the solar equator over a 5-year period. The sunspots are gigantic magnetic storms which could easily swallow the Earth. Over the next 5 to 6 years, the number of sunspots diminishes once more until the next cycle begins. Pairs of sunspots are linked together by an arc of gas shooting out from the solar surface, where they are captured by the sun's magnetic field and pulled back to the surface again. These are known as solar prominences. Not everything gets back to the surface, and streams of charged particles fly away from the sun at enormous speed. This is known as the solar wind. It takes 2 days for these particles to travel the 150 million kilometers from the sun to the Earth, where they are captured by the Earth's magnetic field and drawn in to the north and south magnetic poles. When they enter the atmosphere, they strike atoms of oxygen and nitrogen, making them glow, giving rise to the northern and southern lights, the aurora borealis and the aurora australis. When the sun is very active, with many sunspots, the aurora can be seen as far south as Sidmouth. This was the case at the last solar maximum in the year 2001. A photograph of this event is recorded on one of our souvenir mugs. There have been times when no sunspots have appeared at all, and the sun has seemed to be resting. This happened in the 1600s, when there were hardly any sunspots for some 40 years. This was the time of the Little Ice Age, when the Thames used to freeze solid in winter, allowing horse racing and winter fairs to take place. Summer was cancelled for 15 years, leading to widespread famine and plague throughout Europe. Same sort of thing happened in the early 1800s, when Dickens was writing about Pickwick and snowbound Christmases. Our Christmas cards depicting robins sitting on enormous snowdrifts owe much to that mini ice age. There is so much that we still have to discover about our nearest star. What internal forces cause the irregular 11-year cycle of sunspot activity? What causes the enormous solar flares that give rise to great increases in the solar wind that can knock out satellites and affect power lines in Canada? At least we have here in Sidmouth the very telescope that Sir Norman Lockyer used to set the ball rolling.